I'm Liam Printer, and this is The Motivated Classroom.
Hello, bonjour, hola, welcome, and falche to The Motivated Classroom podcast. This is episode number 56. Can you believe that? 56 times I've sat in here and tried to make an episode and make it interesting. There you go. Thank you for still being here, for those of you who've been here from the start. There has been an enormous reaction to last week's episode with Dr. Florentia Henshaw, and I'm not surprised, because it was brilliant, wasn't it? Just incredible. She has such a wonderful way of bringing language acquisition theory into the very concise and understandable nuggets that she has in her YouTube videos and that came across in the podcast. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that episode 55, go and have a listen. It's 25 minutes that will really warm your ears and your heart. So definitely have a listen to that. And one of the things that Dr. Henshaw spoke about at the end of the episode as a takeaway for language teachers was to make sure that we are informed. And by you listening to this podcast, you are trying to be informed, which is wonderful. And in that vein, today we are going to speak about homework and how that works in the language acquisition classroom. What does the research say about it? Let's get informed a little bit about homework and its purpose and how it's best used. And I'll give you a few examples from my class as well as to how I put these into place and my take on this research on homework. Now, of course, there's many, many, many studies out there, and I certainly have not read all of them, but I will try to inform you as best as I can and what I have read, and maybe you'll go off and read a bit more about it and inform me, which is the whole point of this. So hopefully you'll find it quite interesting, and it'll make you think a bit about how you do homework in your classroom. And that is just the point of these episodes, to get us thinking and informing ourselves. But of course, we must start with our little bit of Irish as always. Now today, the word that we're using is the word for home, and that is a walia in Irish. Now I mentioned this right at the beginning of the podcast, because to finish every episode I say Gura Mahagav agus Slán a walia, which means thank you and safe home. Slán a walia translates as kind of health home, which in Ireland we say a lot to say Slán a walia, meaning safe journey home, or we also use it to kind of say I'm out here. So Slán a walia, I'm heading off home, safe journey home. So the word today is a walia, meaning home. And if you think there's a W in that word, there's not. It's a BH, of course. So go and have a look at the program notes for how to spell these crazy Irish words. So let's get straight into talking then a little bit about homework. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of research out there on homework and how much and in what subjects and how it should be done. And really, the way I came into a lot of contact with this research was we looked into this as a school. About 2 to 3 years ago, we had a working group put together on homework. And the job of that group was to read the research around homework and try and make some recommendations as to how much, how frequent, and how we should be doing it, both with our younger learners and our older learners. Now, the consensus from that research, and there was lots of reading done and lots of great presentations on it, essentially was that yes, homework has value, but just like everything, it really depends on how it's done and the frequency at which it's done. And I suppose if there was one key takeaway from it, if you've only got 3 minutes to listen to the very beginning of this episode, I would say that really homework becomes more beneficial as students get a little bit older. So the younger the student, the less homework they should be getting, which does tie in very closely with how we would do things anyway. But that even in middle school, that we shouldn't be giving huge amounts of homework. And that is in terms of their mental well-being, but also just the research around what that does with their learning is really, it doesn't have a massive impact on their learning, particularly because the tasks they are given are often just recycling things they've already done, or it's you trying to get through the next chapter in and getting them to do some of it at home because you've so much content to cover. And I hear you and I feel you in that. We all have been there for sure. I know when I was back in Ireland and they had me teaching all sorts of stuff right at the beginning of my career, I was teaching, I think, civic and political studies at some stage for a little while. And I think I was also teaching religion for a few weeks, which certainly is not my forte, that is for sure. And I wanted to try and get through this content, and I was quickly trying to read ahead the next chapter and figure out what I was teaching. I hope some of you are empathizing with me on this. And then of course I was getting them to read some of the chapter and summarize and make notes, because I thought that would help us to get through the content. But really, you know, that was certainly not the right way to do things. So one of the researchers that looks into homework the most is Ruben Fernandez Alonso and his colleagues. And they've done some really big studies around homework in the last 10 years or so. And one of the first ones that is actually cited cited in the 99 Studies Every Teacher Should Know. A really great book with really summarizes loads of interesting research across all sorts of domains into this wonderful, easy to read book. And this is one of the studies, and this is where I come across Ruben Fernandez Alonso's work. It didn't actually feature that strongly in that working group that I was part of around homework at our school here. So in quite a big study that is cited in that book, he follows with his colleagues 7,500 Spanish teenagers with an average age of about 14. And they looked at homework and how much homework is useful and how much they were doing and did it have an impact or not. Now, it's really important to put the caveat in here that this was students of mathematics and science. Now, they have looked at other students in Latin America a little bit later of other subjects as well. But it is important to think that homework can look very different in different subjects. Now, in this big study, they were typically showing that homework of about 90 minutes to 110 minutes will improve academic achievement. But it is much better when students have regular, short, meaningful homework. They will do significantly better than those who only got homework set occasionally in a big amount. So, for example, if you are thinking, okay, I don't want to give them any homework over these few weeks at all, but I'm going to give them a big thing to do, then a project, and it's up to them to organize their time and figure that out with their group, and they're going to have 2 weeks to complete that. Actually, the research would show across a variety of subjects that, particularly for language acquisition, but also other subjects like mathematics and science, that is not the best way to go about homework. It's just like retrieval practice. Now, retrieval practice, as I've spoken about before, is those little, short, low-stakes tests or remembering things using low-stakes things like whiteboards or mini whiteboard competitions, that there's not a score or there's no grade, but they're very short little things to try and jog our memories about what we did 4 or 5 months ago or 2 or 3 weeks ago. And we mix it up all the time in these little tiny chunks, and now we might do some new information. This is retrieval practice. And essentially, this is replicated in the homework research, that if we just do lots of little things quite regularly, it's much more beneficial than doing one big long thing or a big long project. And also, of course, there's a lot of research around organization and self-management that teenagers need help with that. And if you allow them to just say, oh, you manage your time yourself and figure out your own deadlines, there's research also cited in that book, the 99 Studies Every Teacher Should Know. I'll put a link to that in the program notes. There's also research in that book that shows that this is not beneficial. Students are not good at setting their own deadlines and coming up with their own schedules for things, that even though we want to give them autonomy and allow them to be creative, we don't want to allow them to just set their own deadlines, because they'll end up doing everything last minute. And I'm saying that generally, but that is what the research would show. Now, quite interestingly, in this big study by Fernandez Alonso and his colleagues, is that really homework, when it was done on your own, was much more effective than when it was done with parents or with others. That independent autonomy, self-regulation is a good skill to learn. And what's interesting, though, even though they found that 90 to 100 minutes or so improves the academic achievement, any time after about 60 minutes, the gains were so minimal, they didn't really matter. So you're talking about 60 minutes of homework for 14-year-olds. Now, that's across all of their subjects. Now, a 14-year-old in our school, I think they have 9 separate subjects. So if you're talking about 60 minutes of homework, if they had 4 or 5 of those subjects that day, really, we should only be assigning them 10 minutes of homework, not more than that, really, 10 or 15 minutes. And that is better for them. It's much better than that and sitting down doing an hour of work, as we can see in the research. It's not going to help them. And of course, this ties very closely into language acquisition. Now, what the authors do at the end, they summarize it quite nicely, and they say, it's not necessary to assign large quantities of homework, but it should be systematic and regular, as this promotes autonomy and good study habits. We should not be giving homework that exclusively is repetition of content, as this type of task is associated with less effort, lower results. The how is much more important than how much. Now, that is so key. We do not want to be giving homework out that is simply repeating stuff from that day or going through the chapter of the book. We need to think about how we do it. Now, a few years later, the same researchers conducted a big study in Latin America with nearly 62,000 students in 3,000 schools across 15 countries in Latin America about homework and academic achievement. And they found very similar results. That first study I talked about in 2015 was with Spanish teenagers in Spain. This next one, big study in 2017, was in Latin America. And essentially what they sum up is, at the individual level, time spent on homework had a little effect on academic performance. So again, saying that the time is not really the key thing, it's how it's done. While in the quantitative homework characteristics, it was the frequency of homework assignment which demonstrated a clearer effect rather than the amount. So it's all down to the frequency. And this is what ties very closely into second language acquisition research and language acquisition in general, that we need loads of inputs and loads of contact with the language. So one of the first principles that I want to talk about today in terms of homework in the language acquisition classroom and the way I read into this research, and I've kind of reorganized my homework now a bit, is that for me, homework, I never call it homework first and foremost. I rename it contact with the language. So I'll say to the students, okay, for your contact with the language tonight, what I want you to do is this. Or in terms of contact with the language, and if I do say the word homework, because they need to kind of learn that word, I guess, then I'll say, why do we give you homework? Why are you doing homework? And they'll say to me, it's contact with the language. And I'll be saying, yes, you're getting more inputs. And the more inputs and listening and reading you're doing, the more you're acquiring naturally. And I say those things to the students so they are aware of how languages are acquired naturally and implicitly. Of course, we can focus now and again on explicit things, and maybe it's a grammar ending or maybe there's some vocab, but they should be very sparingly assigned. And really, most of the contact with the language work that they're doing at home, or even better to call it contact with the language learning rather than work. It sounds so much better. They're in school, they're not employees, remember, so it's much more better to talk about learning than work. I think it's really important to continuously highlight to them the reasons that you are assigning them 10 minutes of listening or reading is because that is how we acquire languages naturally. And you're going to have more vocab and more words and more things in your brains ready to come out, and you'll be able to communicate easier by doing these tasks at home. So for me, I've gone away from having them do like gap fill exercises or complete a verb worksheet or a vocab worksheet and then I correct it. What did you get for number one? What did you get for number two? I've really gone away from that. It's extremely rare that students would do that type of home learning or contact with the language because they're not really getting much from it. These are sentences out of context. They're not compelling. They're not interesting. And they're very much just, they're filling out a formula, essentially. And they're not really getting much out of that. And we can see that in the research on gap fill exercises as well, that yes, gap fill exercises will help you to be good at gap fill exercises, but they're not going to help you to be better at communicating, which is what we want our students to do. What that grammar is doing is acting as a monitor. It's making you think and go, oh, should it be an S or an X? Or, oh, no, it's too late. I've missed my opportunity to speak. We want them to be confident. And by doing that, we give them more and more inputs. So here are some of my top tips in terms of homework and the way that I deal with homework or contact with the language, as I say, in my classroom. So honestly, the first question I ask myself when I'm looking at my planning and thinking about assigning some homework is it necessary? Do they actually need to be doing this? Or is it better that they just have time off to play and be children after school? That is really important. I don't want to be that teacher that they feel they always get homework from. And I speak to them regularly about the amount of homework they get from me. Is it too much? Is it too little? Do you feel like you're having contact with the language? Is it moving your acquisition forward? And I ask them those questions. Do you feel like it's helping you acquire more language? So remember, that is the first thing. Is it necessary? Because mental health and well-being should come first. If you're thinking of giving homework just because you think you should or because you should fill up their evening with stuff, I disagree with that entirely. Now, maybe many parents are listening going, no, please, Liam, I need that homework time. It helps me get the dinner ready. OK, so maybe it does help the parents. But is it helping the language acquisition move forward? Ask yourself that question. Is it necessary? Second is renaming it. Contact with the language or language acquisition. And then the next point, point number three for me, is homework or home learning should simply be another way for you to provide comprehensible inputs. Remember, you, the language teacher, are not there in their house. You are there in the classroom and you can give them inputs in the classroom. But you are the primary source of input, particularly for those beginners or near beginners, those first couple of years of language when listening to, as we call, authentic resources, resources that are not made for learners, they are very hard to listen to and read when you are in your first couple of years. So what inputs can I give them that they can use at their level that are understandable to them at home when I am not there to monitor that language and to slow down my speech and all of those things? So of course, I'm going to say, no surprise, reading. books, novels. There's so many wonderful graded novels out there. Graded novels, ones that are written for language learners. So I'll put these links on the program notes. I've mentioned them before, but in Europe, for me, I go to the CI Bookshop run by Kirsten Planta. She's got loads of wonderful little novels and readers to check out. If you're outside Europe, look up cpli.net, the Command Performance Books. There's loads of wonderful books on there for all levels. Now, you may struggle with finding books in languages that are not as widely taught, but this will give you a start if you're teaching French, English, Chinese, Italian, Japanese, Latin. They're all up there on cpli.net. Some of the authors that I use a lot in my classroom are Margarita Perez Garcia, who writes obviously for Spanish, Adriana Ramirez, who's been on the podcast already, and then my students are really enjoying the books by A.C. Quintero as well. She writes lots of fiction and books that really make you page turners, I suppose is the best way. And even my adult friends who are learning Spanish, I've given them books by A.C. Quintero and they've really enjoyed them and asked me for the sequels. So they're some of the ones that I use most, but there are loads and loads out there. Now, I'm sure some of you as teachers are listening to this going, okay, Liam, that's fine. I can assign reading a chapter of a book and I can assign them to read for pleasure at home, but half of them won't do it. And how do I know that they have done it in the first place? And I hear you, I understand that. So first and foremost in the class, you need to constantly go on about the importance of reading and you need to show them you reading. We spoke about this before with Adriana in her episode, that when they have silent reading time, you need to be reading something. It doesn't need to be a novel, but you need to be reading so they can see that you put value on that as well. And if you need some accountability, I like to do things like pick out one key phrase from your chapter that you read that you feel is really important and you're going to share that with your elbow partner tomorrow. Or pick out three words that you didn't know about, look them up and tell the person next to you on the next class the context of those words. So say, oh, I looked up this word and it means microphone and I didn't know this because in the book the guy is always walking around with the microphone. Just these little things that show that they did read the chapter and there's a little bit of accountability there and they're learning and they're getting to output a little bit in a very safe way with their colleagues the next day, and they can help, you can give them those sentences for input as well, of course, but this interaction helps them to feel confident and competent about the new things that they're learning. Another accountability task for reading that I will have them do is pick a key phrase and write a reflection on it. I've talked about this before, the Diario de Lectura, the reading journal. They do this from year two onwards. My year nines, so they're in their second year of learning Spanish with me, have just started doing this. And of course, their reflections are very basic. You know, they're picking out a sentence and it might be a four-line reflection that they've written down. I picked this sentence because I also have three brothers and one sister and I went to Paris last year as well, and so it reminded me of that. They've Google translated a little bit, they've, you know, looked at different phrases. That's fine. I don't correct any of it. I just read it and give a little comment. It's all about the inputs, remember. It's not about that reflection really. It's about the inputs and the conversation with me. So that's some of the ways that you can have some accountability for those reading tasks. Now, of course, the other way to get inputs is listening. So if you can find podcasts or YouTube videos or Netflix, or I love to use Duolingo stories. They're brilliant. They're so, so good in terms of inputs at a comprehensible level to them. Songs, you know, the Senor Woolly songs for Spanish. They're wonderful, brilliant ways to give the students more inputs in an evening at home. And what I find with the Senor Woolly songs for Spanish is when they are assigned that to do some of those little games or nuggets with the song at night, it takes 8 or 9 minutes, they come in the next day loving the song. I might have played it once in class and they're all trying to be too cool, like, oh, I don't like that, or that's corny, or oh, that's silly, oh, that one's not good. And then of course everyone else goes, yeah, I didn't like it either. But if they do it at home and then they're working on it, they come back in like singing it and they're all really into it. It's funny how that works. So getting them to listen to really basic songs, and maybe they're taking out a word or the best sentence, all these things, as long as it is comprehensible to them. Now, the next point, I have no idea what number I'm on here. I think I'm on 5. And on my file in front of me here, it says 8, but it's definitely not 8. So there you go. I'm not a teacher of mathematics. I am terrible at counting. So I think I'm on number 5. And for me, the next one is the apps. So I've spoken about Senor Woolly for Spanish. It's absolutely brilliant. There are loads of great things out there like EduPuzzle, where you can have songs and you can give them questions on those songs as they're listening. Also, Duolingo, I think, is really great. Quizlet, anything else you use that will give them inputs that are understandable to them at home. Now, as they get more advanced in terms of the reading, they could be reading articles on like BBC Mundo, I use for a lot for Spanish, or from a newspaper. So all those mainly tasks for me with the contact with the language is all about more inputs. I want to provide them with more inputs at home. But what about output tasks like speaking and writing? Could they do those at home? Now, yes, absolutely they can. And I like to give them writing tasks to do at home, because if they're doing a writing task in class, then that is not time they're getting inputs from me. That's why I prefer them to do it at home. Do they use Google Translate now and again? Yes. And sometimes you'll have to speak to them and show them that you don't think this is the best use of their time. And I like to say to them, do you really think the school has employed me to correct Google's mistakes, to correct a computer algorithm? No, they've employed me to help you with your language learning. It's totally okay that you make mistakes. And I say to them, I love a juicy mistake. If you make a juicy mistake, that means I've got something to teach the next day. Because if you made that mistake, there's other people too. So please show me the juicy mistakes. I don't need to correct an algorithm as my job. I'm not getting paid by Google. Certainly not enough to be doing that. So I will give them writing tasks to do at home. Now, how often are they doing writing that I will grade or formatively assess? Usually like once every unit. So once every 4 or 5 weeks, they'll do some type of writing task at home, and I will give them some feedback on that that will go towards their summative, which is their graded material, which we have to do as part of our job as teachers. Now, I'm sorry, but I just do not sign up to our job as teachers is to be grading and marking every night and every weekend. I just do not sign up to that. I think if I'm going to be a great teacher, I need some mental health and space and time away from the job. And if I'm marking and grading all the time, I'm not going to be grading class because they're not going to be prepared. So I will have them just do one every 5 or 6 weeks. And of course, they're doing little loads of formative tasks in school all the time that I'm looking around. They're writing in whiteboards. I'm checking their spelling. They're writing their stories collectively. We're doing it as a group, whatever. But in terms of a big-ish writing task that they get proper feedback on, it's once a unit, so once every 6 weeks or so, 5, 6 weeks, and they will get that before they do their summative so that it's useful. And then, of course, they'll get some feedback on the summative, but way less and less detailed because the unit is now over and we're kind of moving on. So it's better to give it on the formative tasks. Now, I realise there's some of you listening to this going, there's just no way I could do that, only give them a formal writing task every 5 or 6 weeks where they get feedback. How do I know what they've learned? How do I know what they can do? But really, for me, this principle comes down to two things. One, understanding that language acquisition is a complex process that goes on in their heads and they need loads of inputs, and that the outputs can be there for interaction, but that they're not part of the acquisition process. And also understanding that I need my own time to plan and be the best teacher I can be. And so, yes, we do lots of little formative tasks and the reading diaries and little things they do at night, but not a big task that requires really big feedback from me. I just don't have the time or the proper space to do that more than once a unit properly, I mean. Now, for my older students who are preparing for their A-levels or their diploma, yes, they will do it a bit more regularly. Every 2 to 3 weeks, maybe they'll do a writing task and I sit down and do the feedback with them. I correct it while they're sitting with me, so I don't bring it home with me. That's how I do it in terms of contact with the language. Now, it's really important in these output tasks like writing that you provide autonomy and creativity. So, for example, if you've done a story, you would ask them to write the same story, but with different characters or with a different ending or in different places. So it shows that they can use the structures, but they're redoing the context. Or you could say to them, OK, we've done this class story and it was quite silly and loads of funny things happened. I want you to write it out for homework, but make it more believable. And so that would mean instead of the person waiting 15 hours for a bus, they just waited 15 minutes and you give them an example of that. Or they'll do an output task like compare yourself or your best friend or your family member to our invisible character in our story, for example, giving them autonomy and creativity, asking them to come up with things that are important to them, talking about their lives, foods they hate, things they find disgusting, anything like this. And finally, in terms of research tasks, so inquiry-based learning. Now, I believe there is a place for inquiry-based learning, but not all the time. I think direct instruction, particularly in the language classroom, is hugely important, and that would be backed up by many research studies. But people are still really into inquiry-based learning, and that's fine. We do some inquiry in our class too. Of course we do. So do they do inquiry-based learning in terms of research, looking up things about a project or a theme we're doing? If we're looking at, for example, right now, Los Desaparecidos, the disappeared in Argentina, do they look that stuff up at home or in class? I prefer that they do research-based tasks at home. I am not a fan of them sitting behind their computers and researching together when we have class time. Why? Because they're not getting inputs. They're not getting comprehensible inputs from me, from the reading, from listening. Typically, they're looking stuff up in English. They are chatting away to their friends. They're maybe being a little bit productive for a quarter of the time, but I think it works much better as a home learning task. So that would be another one I might assign as contact with the language. So if ever they were doing an inquiry-based learning for projects, do that at home, not in the class, so that I can give you more inputs. So I hope that gives you a little bit of an insight into what homework or contact with the language looks like in my classroom. And as I've said many, many times before, I'm just trying to share the way that I do things, having read some of the research. But of course, you are the master of your own context and you know what works in your situation. The idea is that you're just a bit informed and you think about it in another way and maybe you try one or two new things. But I'm certainly not trying to say that the way I do things is right and the only way, because I know I'm continuously making errors and mistakes too and trying to learn from them. If you have different ways of going about doing homework and how you do it and the amount and how you call it in your class, then do let me know. Get in touch with the Motivated Classroom on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook and let us know what you thought of this episode. And speaking about providing loads of comprehensible inputs, lots of people have been asking me if I do workshops online in comprehensible input teaching. So I've actually gone ahead and set up an online workshop that will run over 3 Saturdays for 1.5 hours on each of those Saturdays in the Saturday afternoon, Swiss time. I know that might be different for you around the world, but that is going to be taking place in 2 Saturdays in November and 1 Saturday in December. So if that's something you're interested in, if you'd like to attend that workshop online with me, just check out my website, liamprinter.com. And you will be able to find it there under consultancy. So hope to see you at that workshop. Next week, we're going to delve a bit more into this idea of learning at home. And we're going to talk about parental beliefs and attitudes and how they can impact language acquisition and what our students think of language learning and maybe how that ties into retention and how many students study the language in the future. A huge thank you to all of the listeners, of course, especially to my patrons. You can find the Motivated Classroom on patreon.com or you can go to my Buy Me a Coffee page if you feel like. You would buy me a coffee or a bag of crisps once a month if you bumped into me in the street and you said, "There, Liam, I love your podcast. Want to get you a coffee just to say thanks." Well, wonderful. And if you're not in a position to do that, no problem at all. Just keep listening for free. Of course, we need to finish with our word of Irish for the day, which today was a walia, meaning home. And on that note, Gurumila Mahagav, agus slán a walia.
The Motivated Classroom podcast is an original production by Liam Printer. I'm at Liam Printer on Twitter, and my YouTube channel is Liam Printer, The Motivated Classroom. Full podcast notes with links to resources are available on my website, liamprinter.com. For more, find and follow The Motivated Classroom podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Graphics and music are provided by Paul Mahan. Intro clips are thanks to the wonderful multilingual staff at the International School of Lausanne.